Welcome back to the show. Let's talk to our friend, Mr. Gaurav Sharma, an independent oil analyst from Sharecast/Digital Look. Gaurav, very good morning to you.
Good to see you.
I thought this was lovely. Okay, the headline of your conversation: with relative stability in the oil market, should we now focus on demand? Stability.
Well, I would say
that's a great word. We've done enough stability in anything this year.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's say it's relative stability. And the reason I flagged this up is because as soon as the oil price sort of Brent crossed 60 and the West Texas flirted with 60, we had this chat for about, all right, the only way is up. Now, I have always maintained that the oil markets, you know, speculation aside, they've always been a story of demand.
Yeah.
How much demand is out there? And I think we should just temper our expectations a little bit. It's not going to be a one-way climb. I do still think that we could touch about 75 barrels come the end of the year.
Okay.
But look at between then and where we are at the present moment in time. And what we see right now is, well, are we looking at the US to drive the market forward? Are we looking at China? Are we looking at the emerging markets as a whole? We're certainly not looking at the OECD, basket of countries to drive demand. Now, Chinese demand was good for Jan and Feb, but not as good as Jan and Feb 2014. US demand, well, it's on the up. A few more SUVs and a few more Humvees on the streets. It's the driving season, as they call it in the States. But I still don't think it is enough to sort of make the price shoot upwards. And the ancillary factors, you look at the geopolitics, where you get a little bit of support for what's happening in the Yemen, but it's not a major incident. And you look around elsewhere, well, the dollar is relatively strong. So what I say, given that backdrop, I am looking forward to June. It's going to be a critical month, not just for the oil markets. And as we were discussing before we went live.
So I guess Federal Reserve interest rates, OPEC potentially cutting.
Yes. And so what if both episodes sort of take place in tandem within a short space of, say, 4 weeks? Will that be enough to... I think they'll cancel each other out should that happen, because one would strengthen the dollar, the other would try to lend support to the price, and we'll again find kind of middle ground. But I have a feeling neither is going to happen. Let's see. You know, nobody has a crystal ball. But I don't think OPEC would want to cut, because the Saudis have forced them into not cutting so far. So they'll resist the temptation, in my opinion. But let's see what unfolds. Right now, I'm kind of 70-30 in favor that OPEC will not cut in June.
And is this relative stability good for the likes of Russia, or is it really now starting to bite in terms of their economy? Sorry.
Not yet good, but they're certainly breathing a sigh of relief.
Yeah.
Because essentially what they do is they cut their internal taxation in ruble terms in response to an oil price decline. Now, what they can do is they can keep their own taxation levels where they are to support their domestic companies, and they can keep their taxation levels for Russian players where they are if the oil price sort of sticks between $60 and $65. And we are kind of seeing that at the moment. So the Russians will breathe a sigh of relief, but they're not out of the woods yet, definitely.
Understood. Okay, so moving on to the next subject. We won't see you before the general election, okay? Is there a different, depending on the outcome, has that got any bearing in anything?
Oh, definitely. I mean, in two ways. One for the corporates, one for the industry in general. I've looked at, my life is pretty boring, but I have looked at the pages, the energy sections of quite a few of them, including UKIP. And I would say, on placing everybody on an even keel, I would say the Tory proposals are the best for the oil and gas business. The Labour proposals are more or less on par, but the whole thing about an energy price freeze, it's kind of price negative for the likes of Centrica, who have this morning acknowledged the political risk. There's also a bit of nonsense in there, because UKIP's portfolio says we'll get rid of all these renewable energy people and because they get a lot of subsidies. Well, I have some news for Nigel Farage. I think whether you look at copper, which used to trade at the LME, or you look at all sorts of other stuff, including the oil and gas business, and we go back good 50 years, they've always relied on some form of subsidy or the other. So it's not somehow exclusive to the renewables business. But in terms of taxation, in terms of the general investment climate, in terms of the headline taxation on taking across all even parameters, I would say the Conservatives are best placed, which doesn't come as much of a surprise.
Okay, so in terms of the oil companies, I've read a statistic from Wood Mackenzie recently, cutbacks of $15 billion a year. What are these cost cuts actually mean?
Well, it's absolutely fascinating. You know, last week I was in the States for a technology conference, courtesy of a company called ServiceNow, and they explored something, saying how these guys are streamlining their estates. So it's not sort of machines replacing men. Rather, what they're doing is they're streamlining their sort of front-facing workforces, cutting down by about 20-25%. Then they're looking at their own IT estates, and they're looking at their own old-fashioned processes and how they go about their business, general admin staff, rig maintenance, and so on. And they're digitizing it across the board. So let's say, hypothetically, Shell and BG merge.
And they're reporting this week, aren't they?
Exactly. So these two guys come together. Some chap who's head of HR and IT and all these processes, we say, when the merger happens, you've got to shave off 20% of the costs. Yep. That's the industry standard.
I don't suppose from a parochial point of view that would have any impact on the forecourt, would it? Because the oil companies have long since bemoaned the fact that they don't actually make any money at the forecourt given the taxation.
Well, the general trend seems to be that they're divesting most of their R&M, refining and marketing assets. So yes, but if cuts are made across the board, definitely have a bearing on EBITDA, without doubt. But these forecourts, it's a selling trend. Mm. It is definitely a selling trend. Shell has, I think they recently announced last month that they'll be getting rid of some of their forecourts and so on. Yeah. BP itself is sort of outsourcing some of the stuff, i.e. they'll keep the branding at the gas station, but somebody else would, you know, sort of manage and operate the facility. They don't make enough money. No. I would say about 4 to 5p a litre. That's what we're looking at, and that's not. I think the general trend as far as both BP and Shell goes is probably more upstream than downstream.
Okay. That's a few words on tallow oil.
Yeah, there's this rumor doing the rounds that that BP might go in for tallow. I've been hearing this for the last fortnight. Some of the readers some of the viewers have also sort of written in saying, is that a possibility? Yes, it is a possibility in theory, but you know, there are lots of theories doing the rounds. Will BP find a white knight in Chevron, shake hands? Will BP do this or that? As we were discussing before we sort of went on air, I think BP has a very good, solid, unique proposition to offer. And I think BP is, it's on its way up. Why would BP want to, sort of upset things and so on? As Prime Minister said this morning, wants BP to remain a national champion. So I think BP is in reasonably good fettle at the moment, even though the crisis across the pond and the legal problems there haven't been resolved just yet. And Bob Dudley has said on record that he is preparing his company for a $60 oil price for the next 3 years. So they are also, managing their budgets pretty well based on a low price. I don't think it'll be 60 for another 3 years, but we're not getting 108 times.
So. Okay, well, we started the segment talking about stability. Let's just have a look at that looks pretty stable to me.
It sure does. And essentially, I've been banging on about an equilibrium price of about $60. We've got pretty much all of them in that range. And what it does is that we are likely to hover around this range for a little while yet. Let's see what happens at OPEC. Barring a financial tsunami, we're not falling to 40.
Yep.
Barring a major geopolitical incident, we're not even going to 80. So we will sort of lurk around this range. There'll be a few ups, there'll be a few downs. But I think, realistically speaking, unless we get some demand support, which is our entry point of our conversation, unless there is some tangible demand support, which I don't see on the horizon just yet, we are not crossing to 70.
OK. Gaurav Sharma, independent oil analyst, Sharecast Digital. Look, thank you, as always, for your thoughts. Let's take a very quick break, then hopefully I'm going to hand over the reins to Mr. Zach Meir, who is going to interview the Chief Scientific Officer of Feedback PLC, and then we'll have Mr. Ben Harrington, business journalist at Betaville Blogger. We'll be back after the break. Thank you.